This is Jake Rosen of WFTE, and I'm sitting here with David Rosen, with whom I had the pleasure of attending day one of the 2016 Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia. And we're here to tell each other what we saw, because maybe even though we both looked at the same thing, we saw different things, and to discuss it, and to tell you what it was like to actually be there. David, what do you think?
Well, to people who don't know who I am, I'm 36 years old. I'm the son of Jake Rosen. I've been involved with WFTE since the beginning, but not ever in a capacity such as this. And I was very grateful for the opportunity to attend the Democratic National Convention, the I'm With Her convention with you, my dad. Thank you.
Well, it was a convention that for some people was not I'm With Her. For some people and for many people, it was Feel the Burn. In fact, when we got to Pennsylvania, to Philadelphia, my impression was that the downtown city was awash with young people and not so young people walking around with T-shirts, Feel the Burn, or Bernie for President, or I'm with Bernie, or carrying signs, or there were floats. The place was flooded with that kind of stuff.
Building on that, I think in 2008, if we go back to the Clinton-Obama election, there was this subtext from Hillary Clinton, which could be characterized as, is this really happening? Which she didn't believe. And I think, personally, going, first, and we'll talk about, the event more than the political analysis in addition, but is this really happening? Because, you're right. There is such a strong show of vitality for Bernie Sanders people, and the question is only, are they going to get on board?
Well, the New York Times the next day, day two, Tuesday, July 26th, by the way, July 26th, an important day in Cuban revolutionary history, different story. But in any case, the New York Times on July 26th, referring to the Democratic Convention, said their lead headline was Democrats Fight to Pull Together on an Unruly Day. And what I was asking David before was, do you think it was unruly from what we saw? Is that an accurate description of what we saw? So we want to tell you what we saw.
So, Pop, let's start about talking about our trip. So, I woke up. You were here already. I could have took the Acela, which was $180 out of Penn Station, or the other train, which was $107. But I got the Greyhound bus for $11. So I took that. I was up at 5, was on the bus at 6:40, was here in Philly at 9. You have some friends. We're staying at a great apartment here. Dropped off the bags. And
by the way, that's typical of the people who came to the convention. I haven't met too many delegates who have their own room. Everybody seems to be sharing with somebody else. So going to these conventions is a group activity in many, many ways. People bring their knapsacks. People bring whatever. They're elected delegates, but they're camping out in fancy hotels.
Right. Well, maybe we're luckier than all of them, actually. But maybe not. Who knows? So we got to the convention center after coming to the apartment we were at. And the scene there, first of all, it's hot.
Oh, wait, before we got to the convention center, we had to get credentials. Getting credentials, that's a story in itself. First, you had to have clearance from the Secret Service. Then you had to have clearance from the White House press office. Then you had to go at an appointed hour, first to the Secret Service room, and then to the White House room to pick up the credentials. And only the designated person could do that. And I was a designated person, and I picked up credentials for 5 people for WFTE. And when I went and I said, well, what is the Secret Service credential for? Nobody could tell me. They said, we don't know. But if you don't have it, you may be in trouble.
Well, that was similar to another, the other moment we sent in the convention center where we walked into a room. We asked, because I thought this was the specialty media lounge, and I had yet to go to the Wells Fargo Arena where the Sixers play, and, in the sports complex where the actual, meat and potatoes of all the action was. And I didn't know what we were looking for, so I figured we'd better get a sense of our bearings. And a lady said to us, well, if you don't know what room you're in, you shouldn't be here.
And she called the cops on you.
She called the cops on us. Right. So that happens. But, Cops.
Despite the fact that we had this big Secret Service badge tucked right in front of our chest. Well, anyway, we got out of that. We weren't shot. We weren't thrown to the ground, but we were yelled at and pushed around.
These guys are probably Philadelphia Eagles fans. Just saying. Anyway.
Well, it was extremely hot in Philadelphia. It was the hottest day on record in Philadelphia.
Was it?
Yep. It was extremely hot.
Well, some of the people, we ended up getting on a bus, so then finding the buses was hard, but we found the bus, and, you know, we asked this person and that person, and eventually we got on the bus, and the bus took us to the tents where the press were. But some people, Dad, and they must have been Bernie people, marched there, and they say it's about 6 miles, but it was 94, 95 degrees with the, you know, heat index at 100. So that gives you a sense of the passion of
these people. It wasn't some people. It was about 1,000 people. I mean, it was an enormous number of people.
They said that the rally was 4,000.
Really?
That's what I heard walking the streets.
Uh-huh. Well, there were a lot of people at this rally. They were mostly young people. That is to say, they were mostly people in their 20s and 30s. And it seemed there were two prerequisites to be at this rally. One was you had to be in your 20s and 30s, and the other was you had to have a tattoo somewhere.
Or a Robin Hood hat.
Or a Robin Hood hat, yeah, right. But these people were determined that Bernie was going to be the presidential candidate. And they didn't really care what the number of delegates was.
There's some old people there, too.
Me.
No. Anyway. So anyway, we got to the tents. And so we pull up. And so basically there's a basketball hockey arena where the main action's happening. And, you know, those are much more intimate than, say, like a football stadium or, you know, the older baseball stadiums, which can really be, you know, labyrinthine. But anyway, before we went there, there were three huge media tents. And when I say tents, each one was almost the size of a practice field stadium. And each one of them had every single media outlet in the
world.
From everywhere. From the Daily Show to the PBS NewsHour.
The biggest newspaper in Japan.
Right.
All kinds of television shows. And they had set up, they had mini studios set up.
And food trucks outside there.
Right. And we went all through that. We saw everybody working. And in every spot, there's dozens of people. And they each had a laptop. And they're all typing away. And I'm thinking to myself, how many millions of words are being typed? For what? For who? Who's going to read this? What's it all about? I don't know.
Well, both Facebook and Twitter, and with Facebook, Instagram, had some statistics on that. If I was actually good at paying attention, I would have remembered. But something like 95 million photos being placed on Facebook a day, something like that, and you know.
All right. Well, anyway, we scoped that all out. We saw what was going on these tents, and then we went to the arena itself, which was where the convention was being set up. The convention was going to start in the evening. This is the middle of the afternoon, but we went there early to find out what was going on and what was where and how we could position ourselves and do whatever we wanted to do.
So the arena has, you know, a bleacher level, then there's two suite levels, and then there's, you know, the good seats, and then there's the really, really good seats. And the really, really good seats, that's where the delegations were. And a delegation is each state, you know, New York, Arkansas, Missouri, has a group of people. Those are delegates. They're actual people. And those people were elected. That's what happens in and half of those people were elected as Bernie Sanders delegates, and half of them were elected as Hillary Clinton delegates. And the rest of the people there were press like me, except some of them were more well-known, such as Wolf Blitzer and, you know,
Chris Matthews, Todd, whatever his first name is, all the people you see on network TV, Chris Todd.
Chuck Todd.
And there was Tom Brokaw.
Wasn't Steve Kornacki, with whom I confused Chris Hayes with, right? Which was a terrible faux pas. But interesting about these news people was their appearance across the board was quite striking and attractive, and of course they have, you know, a face for TV, whereas maybe I have a face for radio. But up close and personal, just a little different, I'd say. Just a little different.
They looked terrible.
Don't say that, Dad.
No,
don't.
It's true. Each and every one of them looked awful. They had horrible slouching postures. Their skin was no good. People you thought were tall turned out to be very short.
EJ Dion, who looks 6'5".
It's actually, 5'6".
But then my real hero, John Heinlein, who wrote with Heilman, who wrote with Mark Halperin, Double Down. Well, John, he's like 6'6", and, built like a football player. But Mark, he's, 5'10", and built like a human. But, they look, when they're on Morning Joe, comparable. Anyway.
But they were the only ones. I stood next to Tom Brokaw. I thought he was going to collapse. It was amazing. I mean, these guys, I don't know.
That RNC must have took it out of him.
Either that or they're really propped up for the beginning on the camera.
A lot of late night parties.
Well, there we were together with all the rest of our colleagues, so to speak. And then we wandered onto the floor. And in time, after everything got set up, the delegates came onto the floor. And
for what it's worth, I just want to go on record and say Chris Hayes's producer is very beautiful. Just wanted to say that. Okay, not good to stereotype. So there was a political event.
That's right. And I had this impression. I watched the I didn't go to the Republican convention, but I did watch on TV. I watched all of it, and I heard all the speeches. But the main important thing was that I watched it. And in watching it, I could see that, for the most part, the arena was empty. Or it was a third full. Or it was a quarter full. Or it was
really
full in spots where they were going to shoot the pictures. And the rest of it was not full when they pulled away. You could see there wasn't people weren't there. People who were there spent their time talking. There was a big hubbub. And the speeches were not paid attention to. And the speeches in general ought not to have paid attention.
I did pay attention to all of it.
Republican speeches?
And, not all of it, but, some of it. And to be honest with you, until this moment, I'd forgotten all about it.
Right.
You just mentioned it. I mean, what we saw in day one had more. It was like comparing a meal at, a five-star restaurant to a drive-thru.
That's exactly right. Once the Democrats got into the hall, they didn't leave. The place was packed, and it stayed packed, number one. Number two, the Republican convention, I counted when they panned through the crowd. Maybe I counted 20 people of color. This was an older, middle-class, white audience. The Democrat convention, young, for the most part, black, brown.
Quite a spectrum.
Asian, white. I mean, it was as integrated a picture of America as you could possibly imagine.
That leads us to the start of the program. Once we got there and I spent $81 on merchandise, of which I have somewhat pride in, we saw the first slate of speeches before the main program. The main program started at, 7 p.m.? That's when we got
8 p.m.
kicked out of the Facebook lounge where we were enjoying it from time to time. So we were sort of barnstorming, sneaking in and out and hustling ourselves around.
And talking to people.
Yeah.
Interviewing delegates and asking questions.
Yeah. Talking to such luminaries like Jerry Springer, Michael Steele.
Michael Steele, I said, aren't you in the... Michael Steele was the chairman of the Republican National Committee.
Also 6 inches taller than I'd ever imagined.
Right. Michael, I said, aren't you in the wrong place? And Michael Steele said, after a while, you begin to realize both of these parties are the same.
He said that?
That's what he said, going down the stairs.
Oh, he didn't know he was on the record. You better watch yourself, man. They have to say off the record, right?
He didn't say
that. He didn't say off the record.
He just
said
that. And I had my press pass on, so.
Shit.
There you go.
Well, so the first, the first six speakers were.
You saw Karl Rove.
Karl was there, yeah. Well, Fox was there. And all their fierce blonde stature. But not overweight. So the first six people on the slate were non-Caucasian, to my recollection.
That's right. It was one African-American or Mexican-American or Native American after another.
Right.
Whether they gave a speech or they sang or they danced or whatever they did.
That's right. The first opening thing was the AME Zion.
There was a chorus. Terrific chorus.
That was very good. And then... Well, the news of the day was, of course, of the weekend, was that Debbie Wasserman Schultz had been...
Kicked out.
kicked out of the DNC, for which her consolation prize was being the honorary co-chair of the Hillary Rodham Clinton presidential campaign. So
which the Bernie people thought she was to begin with anyway.
So anyway, the fill-in person who brings in the convention, which there are rules for, went and did it, and she was a lovely African-American woman, but she
did
not...
mayor of the city.
Mayor of Philadelphia.
No, mayor of Baltimore.
Mayor of Baltimore. Oh.
Mayor of someplace, not Philadelphia.
Well, so anyway, she forgot to gavel. So she then had to come back on stage and do the gaveling.
Right, the gaveling is part of the rules. You don't gavel, you haven't done it. You had to rush back in. Everybody
left. Speaking of which, during this time and over the next few hours, they had a few things called voice votes.
Voice votes are votes designed to make sure that the chairman decides the decision.
We're gonna vote on the rule that we talked about in committee. The rule passes, say aye. Aye! Against, say nay. Nay! Oh, the eyes have it.
Clearly.
I mean, how the hell could you
the
know?
The eyes clearly have it.
The eyes clearly have it. It's just such... It's the only thing, the subtext of all of that is we are going to have a bit here where we make clear to all of you that you know that we are not listening.
No, but here's the important thing about that. The rule that they adopted, the rules for the convention that they adopted, had actually been the subject of a very complex series of negotiations.
They were voting on the rules.
They were voting on the rules. And these and what they were voting on had been decided upon after complicated negotiations between the Clinton campaign and the Sanders campaign. And after they agreed to it, then it went to the Rules Committee of the convention, which agreed to it almost unanimously. And this is what they brought to the floor. And when it was proposed to be adopted on the floor, because that's how it has to be done, the Clinton people did not wish to vote for that compromise. That's what was going on.
Well, what we know to be true is that if you knew all of that, that 95% of the delegates had no idea or weren't voting. If they had an idea, they were Clinton people, and if they didn't have an idea, they were Sanders people, because the Sanders people had no idea.
It may be, but that's what happened. But the thing passed.
We're going to take a break for a moment, and we'll be right back to talk about the fallout from the main program.
So the rules were adopted. The Clinton people were not happy with it. The Sanders people felt that the Clinton people were dissing them, right? From talking to a lot of people afterwards, that's what I learned.
So I think one way to look at this is when we finally left, you know, we were riding this, you know, double bus, you know, bus that has a hinge. And in the joint of it where they get the most, like, action, where it rotates, there's a woman holding a baby. And we were packed on, and people were standing, and a lot of these people aren't used to public transportation, so they weren't giving up their seats because, you know, God forbid they stand on a bus. This woman's holding her, you know, three-year-old baby, and so, you know, her husband's right there. So they were doing fine. They were from Wisconsin. I got to talk to them a little bit, and they were Bernie delegates, and that's right. They had their takeaway was how come they haven't done more to reach out to us, and that was not a individual the feedback, but I will say that she wasn't saying she's not in it and not open-minded. I think that the speeches of the evening, from Bernie Sanders to Elizabeth Warren to Michelle Obama, resonated with every single human being there. And I think that Cory Booker was well-received. I think that the other less well-known people were well-received. The special needs woman was well-received. Everyone was well-received.
Yeah, but there were some interesting things. For example, Al Franken came out, and he basically gave a comedy act, which everybody liked. It was pretty funny.
Yeah.
Okay, now he's a senator, but he was a comedian. So he gave a comedy act. He disappeared. Then there was a musical interlude. He pops back up on stage, but now he's with Sarah Silverman.
Right.
It suddenly becomes clear that it's now their task to start to calm the Bernie people down and to get them to accept the fact that Bernie is not going to be the presidential candidate. And so that's what they do.
To put this in perspective, Bernie's contingent had been incredibly loud throughout. And even if you didn't hear that on TV, they were able to. And with Sarah Silverman on stage, they were able to drown out the speaker.
That's right. Any time a speaker made some comment that was basically to the effect that Hillary's going to be the candidate, these half the audience jumped up and started shouting, "No to TPP, no to TPP," or something on that
well,
order.
Well, Bernie.
Bernie. And it was everywhere. It was the Oklahoma delegation. It was the Arkansas delegation. It was, even though the Arkansas
and that
delegation...
And couple was telling us very pointedly about they were Wisconsin delegates, and Wisconsin had gone for Bernie. And a delegate's a real person. So, I mean, what happens when you have delegates is those delegates go. And then...
And they pay their own way.
Well,
all
we'll
these people
that.
Paid
yes.
their own way.
Yeah, but then the New Mexico contingent, which was in front of there, and I've been to New Mexico. I mean, New Mexico has two cities. I mean, you know, and they're not big. It's beautiful. But she said they were at each other's throats, that the divide. And you can really, and then it was really the California group. And I read in the papers afterwards that Gloria Allred, the famous attorney, had to quiet them. I mean, you remember how loud the California people
yeah.
were? Now, mind you, unreported in any newspaper, they had their own private bar, which they didn't
the
let
California
us into.
California people.
Yes. Which
even the press wasn't allowed in.
Even Mr. and Mr. Rosen, not allowed in.
Secret Service credentials notwithstanding.
Not allowed in. They were all drunk, so maybe that's why they were so pro-Bernie.
Well, I don't know about that. But what I do know is that throughout the speeches, the Bernie delegates, if they felt that their candidate was somehow being attacked, they would jump up and shout, "Bernie, Bernie, Bernie, Bernie." So now it's Sarah Silverman and
Al Franken.
Al Franken's turn to try to calm them down. Well, to put a fine point on it, they got booed off the stage and they had to leave. And they did leave.
And then Paul Simon came on.
Right. Paul Simon came on to sing, but that didn't help either. So then the real atomic bomb dropped, Michelle. She came on. Well, nobody fights Michelle. Everybody loved Michelle. And she shows up, and it was pandemonium. And she gives the speech, which is a very interestingly framed speech, which was basically a speech that said, the president sets the moral tone for the nation, and it's how you're going to raise, and he sets, or she sets the tone for how your children will be raised. And who wants to have their children raised by a megalomaniac, greedy guy like Donald Trump?
And also, by the way, P.S., Michelle said, Hillary Clinton is our friend.
Right, exactly. And
you believe that? I mean,
yeah,
she wasn't lying.
That's right. You believe Michelle. That's the way she is. You believe her. Okay. It's a pandemonium. It's a sea of placards. Michelle, Michelle, Michelle. Because each time somebody came to speak, the ushers ran through the crowd and distributed free to everybody placards that were appropriate. So for the Michelle speech, everybody got a placard that said Michelle vertically, 3 inches wide, about 2 feet high, 3 feet high, mounted on a piece of cardboard, and these things were shaken up and down and waved and what have you. You couldn't see Michelle except on the TV, but you could hear her. And everybody was quite happy. And she got done. Then they brought on the keynote speaker.
And that, by the way, when Michelle was done, it was the first time the Bernie people shut up.
That's right. That's right. And then Elizabeth Warren came on, and people paid strict attention to Elizabeth Warren. And Elizabeth Warren gave a very meaty speech. Previously, Cory Booker gave a very long speech.
Cory Booker was terrible.
I had the feeling that Cory Booker was trying to emulate Barack Obama in 2004, when Barack Obama made a speech to the convention that made him a national figure. And I think that the Clintons gave Cory Booker the chance to try to do the same thing at this convention. He went on forever. I have no idea what he talked about.
Cory Booker had great spirit. He looked great.
And people listened to him
great
and applauded
energy.
Him.
And people I know thought he did great. But if you told me or asked me what the hell he spoke about, I couldn't tell you. And I can tell you that it was meandering and it lacked structure. Now, maybe, you know, that's something that he can learn. Like Ben Simmons can learn how to shoot for the Sixers. But he don't know how to do it yet. And, you know, so he's got to figure that out.
Nonetheless, he got a lot of applause.
Yeah.
But then came Elizabeth Warren, who gave a really meaty speech, filled with important political points, well received, didn't go on for too long. And if somebody else might have seemed too long, but she's interesting.
So I mean, what the people have to understand is that going to these conventions is literally listening to 100 speeches.
Yeah.
I mean, if it's not 100, it's 50.
Right.
So you can become mindful of the art of giving a speech.
That's right.
And that the best speech giver was Michelle Obama.
Right.
And if we were going to rank them, it would be Michelle Obama, Michelle Obama, Michelle Obama, Michelle Obama, Michelle Obama, and then, you know, maybe Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders.
No, but the main speech of the evening came after that, and that was Bernie.
Right.
That's what everybody was waiting for. And Robert F. Kennedy Jr., Congressman...
Joseph.
He introduced his former professor,
Warren.
Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah.
No, but Keith Ellison, the Muslim congressman from Minneapolis, Minnesota, came out, and he introduced Bernie, and then Bernie walked out, and there was a 3-minute standing ovation.
And everyone had Bernie signs.
Yeah, and everybody had Bernie signs.
And you said that they gave out Bernie signs, and on the backs they said Bernie for president.
That's right. And then they ran around and they collected those signs and handed out other signs that just said Bernie. And later I asked one of the ushers who had done that, why did you do that? And they said they were instructed to do that because they wanted to calm down the Bernie or bust people, and they thought those signs would do it. But after they did it, somebody said, no, that's the wrong thing to do. So they had to go collect all those signs.
Well, I didn't
give out
see
other
that,
signs.
But that's quite inflammatory rhetoric that was not covered by the New York Times. Hearing it only here, WFTE.
Complete exclusive based on talking to a worker.
There you go. On the ground. Press.
In any case, a 3-minute ovation. If you've never been in a 3-minute ovation, let me tell you, it's a long time. And it was ear splitting, and it was people standing and jumping and all over the arena. Everybody doing it. He finally calmed them down and he began to speak. And he spoke. And he spoke for quite a long time. And frankly, he's a terrible speaker. And you hung on every word.
That's right. He was so great in debates. And maybe we've heard his stump speech many times now. And it was the stump speech. He's not an Obama. That's when we say he doesn't have the great oratorical talents. But his flourish was wonderful.
But what he said, when you heard what he said, you said, that's right. That's right. That's how it is. He didn't offer policy proposals. He didn't offer to say, I'm going to lead you, I'm going to do this. No, he said just the opposite. He said, this election is not about Hillary or Donald Trump or Bernie or any of the other candidates. This election is about the immoral, impossible situation where the wealth is monopolized by 0.1% of the population, and they own that. 0.1% owns as much as the 90% of the rest of the population. And he said that's what this is about, and who could disagree? Who could disagree? But it was fundamentally different than what the Hillary people say, and of course different than what the Trump people say.
And it was designed to organize and unite the delegates.
That's right. And when he said, "We've got to support Hillary. We've got to make her the president because that's the only way to beat Trump," but this does not stop at an election. This goes on.
Well,
there were moans and groans, but there was applause.
Without keeping people more than another 59 seconds or so, what are the next 3 days going to bring?
Well, today will be the actual vote for the nominee. I don't know what they're doing tomorrow. The day after the nominee will accept, basically will be the end.
Tomorrow is a huge all-star lineup. Barack Obama, President Obama will speak, Kane will speak, and Michael Bloomberg will speak.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. We'll be looking forward to seeing what we see today and tomorrow, and we'll give you more of this blog on WFTE. Bye now.
Bye.